from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the San Francisco 49ers have banned tailgating after the game starts following the shooting over the weekend of two men at a preseason 49ers-Raiders game. The victims were being treated at the same hospital where Santa Cruz paramedic Brian Stowe is presently recovering after being beaten nearly to death wearing a Giants jersey at Dodger Stadium. Are these recent incidents isolated, or are they part of a larger pattern of violence? Are teams doing enough to provide security for fans? We want to hear from you. Does violence at sporting events make you more likely to watch from home? Forum is next. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Mayors Ed Lee of San Francisco and Gene Kwan of Oakland, along with the NFL, have called for an end to violence at sporting events after two men were shot and wounded at San Francisco's Candlestick Park. One of the two was on life support, but all are now in fair condition. And the incidents occurred following a San Francisco 49er-Oakland Raiders preseason game over the weekend. Another man was knocked unconscious during the game. And 5 months ago, in March, 42-year-old Santa Cruz paramedic Brian Stowe was beaten by two men outside of Dodger Stadium, suffering severe brain damage. He remains hospitalized. This opening Forum Hour, we talk about fans and violence and what can and should be done. And let's hear from you. Does violence at sporting events keep you away and make you more likely to watch or listen from home? And you can join us, of course, during the program at our toll-free number, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite, and that's 866-733-8786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. With us in studio is Ray Ratto, columnist for CSNBayArea.com, and we welcome you to the program, Ray. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Okay. Glad to have you here. Also glad to have Scott Osler, who is a sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. Good morning, Scott.
Morning, Michael.
And Murray Sperber, visiting professor in cultural studies of sports and education program in the Graduate School of Education at UC Berkeley, author of Beer and Circus, How Big-Time College Sports is Crippling Undergraduate Education. Welcome, Murray Sperber.
Thank you, Michael.
With us by phone from Canton, Ohio, which is, I believe, where the Football Hall of Fame is sociology professor at Kent State University, Jerry M. Lewis, who's also author of the book Sports Fan Violence in North America. Welcome, Jerry M. Lewis.
Good morning. Actually, I'm in Kent, Ohio.
Oh, you're in Kent.
About sixteen miles north of Canton.
Right. Well, glad to have you, and
thank you
for joining us. Let me actually begin, if I may, Scott Osler, with you. You had a column where you said essentially security has to be beefed up. This is really on the teams themselves, not to have snipers there, like some radio host apparently suggested, as you pointed out in your column, but really to do something more and to do something particularly where having more police is concerned.
Well, it's obvious there wasn't enough enforcement. It also might have been the wrong enforcement. They might have had the wrong people there and with the wrong assignments. There just wasn't enough people there. It was a out-of-hand situation from what everything I've heard and emails and all that stuff. Just too much going on and not enough people supervising, watching it, and policing it.
Well, that may have been because this was a kind of aberrant game. At least that's what we're hearing from the officials of the 49ers and so forth. This was a preseason game. Tickets went cheap, all that sort of thing. In other words, this is not what you could expect. And maybe if you do away with preseason games, you've kind of beat part of the battle here.
Well, that's what the owners would like. In fact, Jed York said this would be less of a problem if we had only two exhibition games instead of four. That's what the owners want. But the players don't want that, and it's not going to happen. So that's a ridiculous point. And also, I'd like to point out that all the talk in the papers from the police chief and so forth and from Jed York, that this was a sort of out-of-nowhere experience, an aberrant deal where how did this happen all of a sudden? This is not a typical experience. Well, it might not be typical in the sheer numbers of arrests and incidents and fights, but the fighting and the bad behavior inside the stadium and outside the stadium is not new to either of the local football teams.
Notice also in your column, I just want to talk about ways that things can be made more secure. You took the position that maybe people should have obscene T-shirts removed, which seems to be a little in contradistinction to the First Amendment or something like that. I mean, this guy apparently, at least allegedly, was wearing a thing that said F the 49ers.
Right.
And, you know, Brian Stowe is wearing Giants gear, or at least Giants t-shirt and so forth. I mean, yeah. Can you really keep people from wearing those things?
Well, I'm going to come out in favor of the Constitution, Michael. I'm 95% in favor of the Constitution.
Well, I'll have to talk off air about that other 5%.
I just think there's a provocation factor. I know a lot of stadiums will not allow you to hold up a sign, F the Dodgers or whatever, things like that with bad words on them. And it just seems like kind of a common sense deal that when there is a potential for violence, you don't want to go out of your way to provoke it with t-shirts and so forth. So
this is, though, Ray Ratto, not necessarily like colors. I mean, you know, like gangs against each other. In fact, there were people on the same team wearing the same jerseys who were fighting each other from those videos.
Yeah, I think this was – it became atmospheric after a while. You put people in a parking lot for 5 hours. They've been tailgating. A lot of them are drunk. By the time they get into the stadium, whether they get in before the opening kickoff or not, they're pretty well ready to roll. And they're given a form of entertainment that stops being interesting after about 20 minutes because all the players you're interested in are out of the game. So now you're drunk and you're bored and you're angry. And whether you're looking for trouble or you don't walk away from it, the opportunity, you know, to just go nuts is everywhere. And one fight tends to spark another, tends to spark more and more. There was one I remember between two 49er fans about 8 rows into the lower deck, right behind where home plate used to be when the Giants played there. And the fight lasted a good 3 or 4 minutes, and I kept looking for security or cops. And the cops finally came, and they were running, but they were clearly out of breath because they had been breaking up another fight down at the other end of the stadium. Now, I don't know if that meant they weren't well enough staffed or they were just overwhelmed by the amount of incidents, but it was sort of an indication to me that this was sort of a perfect storm. Scott's right. This, you know, you go to a game and there's always going to be some problems. What happened Saturday, it seems to me, is that you take things that are already volatile, which is, you know, two fan bases that pretend not to like each other, even though they really have very little to do with each other. And you add in, you know, the massive amounts of alcohol that are consumed. And the fact that exhibition football is sort of not really football at all. It's 20 minutes of football and then 2.5 hours of goofing around so they can sell more ads. And you get what you got Saturday night, which is fights on fights that became worse and worse the later on you got, and then it spilled out into the streets after.
Would it have been better if alcohol wasn't sold? You suggested there was a lot of drinking beforehand, and I know the New York Jets once tried to ban alcohol, and people were screaming, beer, beer. But, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's any indication of what might be the crowd's response. Would it help just not to have alcohol sold?
Well, it would. But that's not going to happen because
– too much profit.
Well, absolutely. Monumental profit. I mean, go there on a – you know, just buy an $11 beer. I mean, you can't find an $11 beer anywhere else in the world. You have to go to a sporting event. You know, the best beer in the world in a store is $9. You know, I mean, a bottle of beer anywhere else is $9. You go to a stadium and they add on the potential for violence tax. But they're not going to do that because – alcohol and sporting events long ago married each other, and they are inseparable.
You'd scare away a lot of fans if you didn't serve alcohol.
Well, you wouldn't scare them away. They would just drink at home.
Yeah, well, Professor Sperber was saying it's bad beer.
I'm probably the only person here who actually sits in the upper deck for 49er games, and I'm a longtime fan. And I think Scott's correct that and Jed York's wrong. This behavior, particularly by the demographic of 18 to, say, 35-year-old males, has been going on a very long time, and there's frequent fights between 49er fans. There isn't much presence of police. It gets very dangerous late in the game. And the beer is flowing. I mean, people at the beer stands are buying 5 or 6 beers and taking them back. I think I recall in Indianapolis they had a problem, and what they did is they would only sell 2 beers per customer, and they would stamp the hands with indelible ink, you know, like at rock concerts and such. So you couldn't really buy as much beer. And it had a great effect. It would have the same effect at 49er games. But Ray is completely right. The 49ers are making so much money selling bad beer at phenomenal prices.
They're, but you know the argument, too, that this is there's a lot of tribalism, culture of aggression, these kinds of things.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Alcohol just fuels all that. So the combination.
Oh, yeah. These aren't, Ray said, they get bored. I don't believe these are sports fans. One of the things that strikes me, often these people don't come to the middle of the second quarter, I mean, for regular season games. So I think they're there for the tribalism, for the fighting, for it's become a kind of mosh pit.
But these guys had guns, some of them.
Yeah, that
is the more shocking thing
outside.
Of all, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, outside, yeah, right.
Because they pat you down going inside.
Right.
It would be harder to, yeah.
But, I mean, bringing guns, you know, and right. having them in yeah. a game and then using them, this is
but
a whole different territory.
But I don't think that's a sports phenomenon. I think that's America armed and dangerous. And it's just in all facets of American life, there's just way more guns.
But as you suggested, this was a younger demographic, wasn't it? I mean, that we're pretty clear about than normally. I mean, because it was a preseason game and the tickets were cheaper.
Well, yeah. I think part of it is that I also think that younger people are more likely to get into a fight at any event than older people are. I mean, it's just that fighting seems more fun when you haven't had enough fights to remember the bad side of fighting. You don't see many 55-year-old guys throwing hands, I mean, at
right.
anything.
Right.
I mean, even in taverns, you know, they might swear at each other, but 15 minutes later they're buying each other a beer because fighting takes a little bit out of you.
Yeah. This was a younger crowd, though, at this game
yeah.
because of the nature of the ticket distribution.
And, of course, the 49ers have been talking about people who have season passes giving their tickets to others and trying to right. make sure that they can stave off that kind of problem.
And I hate to do this, but I'm going to call baloney on this again with Jed York and anybody else who involved with these teams that says we want our season ticket holders, when they sell their tickets, when they resell them because they're not going to use them, we want them to know who they're going to sell them to and to be careful about who they sell them to. So if I have a season ticket and I'm going to sell it to you, Michael, I'm going to say, Michael, I'd like you to buy this seat. Now, are you going to take a gun? Are you going to beat anybody up? Are you in a gang? What kind of world do these Jed York and these people live in that they think that I'm going to do some kind of background check on people I'm going to sell tickets to? That's
right.
That's insane.
Also, a huge number of seats in the upper deck where most of these fans go are sold to ticket brokers.
Right.
I know I've bought tickets on StubHub, and they come from Massachusetts. That's not a lifelong 49er fan. That's a guy who's speculating on the price of the game. And I think the 49ers, if they ended that whole world of kind of black market ticketing, there'd be a lot of empty seats there.
Let me bring in Jerry Lewis, who get a little sociologist perspective here. These incidents seem to you to be in some ways removed from the sorts of things you write about or the sorts of things that have come up in research, Jerry Lewis?
Yeah, a couple of questions I'd like to raise. And the panel obviously knows more about the local circumstances of San Francisco than I do sitting here in Ohio. But one thing I would like to say is about drinking. I think we need to be very careful of assuming people are drunk, which I assume is 0.08 or things like that. I think drinking is much more complex. For instance, what happens with drinking, it gives you permission to do what you wanted to do anyway. You go to the spouse abuse literature. It was the devil rum that made me do what I did. And so there's been some research, mainly on college students, that they overestimate the state of their drunkenness. In fact, they think they're drunk, but they don't blood test out at 0.08. So I think we need to be... The other thing, there are all kinds of events that occur. I'm sure they occur in San Francisco. Street festivals, parades, et cetera, where there's drinking, and yet there are no fights break out.
When the Giants won the World Series, it was almost ceremonious. Everything was harmonious, and there was no violence or aggression at all.
The other thing I want to comment on the panel, and you guys are really making great comments, is that doubling the police, and I looked at the ratio in England, and there are about twice as many police in England at soccer matches as there are at American sporting events. The problem with doubling the police, it's very costly. In this era of cutting back on resources, it's very costly. The second thing is police don't like to do crowd control. It's one of the most unpredictable things that happens. And thirdly, their families don't like them to be involved in crowd control. So I think we need to be very careful when we're recommending doubling the police force. We need to look at the culture of the sport and why that facilitates fan violence when other gatherings like rock concerts, although there are some.
But there's a lot of stuff that goes on after victories. That's why I made the notation about the San Francisco Giants winning the World Series. I mean, in cities like Detroit when they've won, or in Newark, for example, things go pretty haywire when there's victory. Los Angeles. Do you get a sense, Jerry Lewis, again, from a sociological perspective, that there's different cultures and different kinds of aggression or testosterone highs or whatever you want to call them with different sports? In other words, you don't see that much at wrestling matches. Maybe it's because they're all phony. I don't know. But football is supposed to be a very violent sport compared to baseball, and yet baseball can be I'm going to go back to a poet here. William Carlos Williams is like the Inquisition sometimes when you're out there with the fans. Do you see a difference between different sports? Hockey, soccer. I mean, the hooligans of soccer come to mind. We have Jerry Lewis with us. You want to comment on this, Professor Sperber, Murray Sperber?
Yeah, there is a difference. And certainly in England, well, they call it the English disease, that there's a huge hooligan element, and it's very tribal. And these aren't really fans. I mean, they've attached themselves to various teams, but there's been some very good books written, and they're really there for the booze and the fighting and such. And now the English have spent a lot of money on police and do control it pretty well. I've spent time in France and seen their reaction. I went to a game where the fans, the home fans, or the kind of hooligan fans, were throwing missiles at the opposing goalie and such. And for the next game, there were riot police. French riot police are very serious and very scary. And then as a penalty, the league, they had a future game that was very important, made the team play it to empty stands as a penalty for not controlling the hooligans and such. So in Europe, they take a much more draconian view, which we probably couldn't do here. But
there's probably more fan cooperation in Europe, too, isn't there?
The real fans. The real fans are very put off by the hooligans, and there's a separation between them, where here, unfortunately, the hooligans seem better integrated into the fans, or the fans don't object. I think they object with their feet. I won't bring my wife to a game, for instance, and this is the first year that I haven't bought tickets by this point because of
Jerry Lewis. We lost connection with you, but I want to get you back.
Yeah,
I want to get you on the record about differences as you see it in different sporting events.
I looked at 200 riots from 1960 to 2000. Seven, and they're really located in three team sports: football, basketball, and baseball. Hockey, surprisingly, doesn't, at least in terms of press reports. What's unique about America or North America is that we have sports riots in high school. We have it in college. Some of the more serious ones take place, for instance, in Ohio State Michigan game, where the students will burn sofas in celebration. What was unique about this particular event, although I wouldn't call it a sports riot, although some of the fighting certainly would qualify, is that it happened at a preseason game, which is very rare. Most of it is associated with either major games, which, of course, this would have been a rivalry in that sense, or championship play.
And, Scott, you bring up the idea of getting more fan cooperation, which I alluded to a moment ago, by getting fans to text, but also you talk about the pie, a bigger part of the pie in terms of ownership and what they do about security, and also maybe pressing the DAs to prosecute more.
Yeah, one question I would have, which I don't have the answer to, is I'm asking for more police to come to games with more police protection. And a professor here has made the same point that in Europe at soccer they have a strong police presence. If we do beef up the police at the stadiums, who pays for that? You know, if they double,
right,
if they send twice as many cops out to Saturday night's game at Candlestick,
the 49ers.
Well, you were
pay.
Saying the owner should pay. Right?
Well, I believe the owner should pay.
Police forces
the money
are cutting
there.
Back all over.
Right.
You know.
Why should we? Because a lot of this stuff is owner caused. The fact that they have these terrible exhibition games that bore everyone to tears and cause a different demographic to come in. It was basically this setup, this deal. The stew was made by the owners. They should be the ones paying their way out of it, not us.
What about the rivalries, though, Ray Ratto? I mean, like you said earlier, there's a lot of inflation of the rivalry between 49ers and Raiders. And yet Oakland and San Francisco, that's really the heart of a rivalry like that. Just like in L.A. when a guy sees a Giant jersey, Giants won the World Series, it's like a bull seeing red flag sometimes, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Or a Crip seeing a blood type of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you lead me into the point I was going to make, which is that typically, Raider-Charger games in San Diego are very dangerous because when the Raiders were in L.A., they would go down to Charger games and there was a gang element in each city and they would choose that as their neutral ground and basically go at each other. And there is still some element of that now, although it's not really so much gang-related as it's almost become sort of tradition.
There's been a lot of downplay of gangs in this. Do you think that's fair, or do you think that's a
well? Without knowing exactly how many people involved in these fights were gang members, or just drunken fans, or just fans who wanted to have a fight, there I think it's sort of irresponsible to say there is one cause for this. I mean, Scott's right. I don't think the security was up to snuff on this, but picking out one group rather than another. That was the thing that I found most disturbing about this incident, was that it immediately turned into, well, that's what Raider crowds do. Well, except that the NFL says, well, Raider crowds are now above average in terms of how they're policed at home games. Well, 49er fans, or an element of them, are just as tough as the most stereotypical of Raider fans. And if you want to sit there and say, well, it's their fault, but it's not our fault, then you're not really attacking the problem at all. You're just basically trying to delegate blame. The riot in Vancouver after they lost to the Boston Bruins in the Stanley Cup final, that's not an arch rivalry. It was a rivalry made by seeking out the same trophy.
These rivalries break down in some way. I mean, not the rivalry so much as maybe the stereotypes. Raiders are hard charging. Raider fans beer drinking. 49ers would be more apt to be drinking wine, that sort of thing. Or maybe they see themselves in that way, and that just fuels things.
I think that's a stereotype that, frankly, both teams have outgrown. The wine sipping.
Both of the 49ers. Fans on each team.
Yeah, the wine sipping 49er fan that was tied into sort of that the erudite Bill Walsh era, where it was, well, we're sort of above the fray. We play this elegant sort of game that's really not violent, which was, another joke, but, because football is violent. But I think those stereotypes no longer hold, certainly for either group. I mean, I think you look at most Raider fans now, they're fairly apathetic because they've looked at bad football for a long time. And many of them have simply stopped going, not because it's dangerous, but because they're not getting entertainment value. And I don't know that, walking through it, and Murray could probably speak to this better than I, but, you walk through the parking lot before a game, I don't see a lot of wine coolers being served either. I mean, I think it's standard alcohol like every other place.
Yeah, you'd have to go to a Stanford home game to see the wine coolers. But,
We're going to heat up that rivalry here, too, between Stanford and Cal, if we don't watch out. Yeah,
I think a distinction has to be made between the hooligans and the fans. I really maintain the hooligans are not particularly interested in the game. They couldn't tell you the difference between Frank Gore and Joe Perry, for instance. And in fact, they distract the fans from the game. I'll give you when I go to games.
Hold that thought, Murray, because we're coming up on a break. I want to give the phone number and email address and get our listeners involved in this. In fact, you can do that now. Our toll-free number is available to you, 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us. Again, the question is, are teams doing enough to protect their fans? And we want to hear from you on that. And does violence at sporting events make you more likely to watch or stay at home? You can email us, forum@kqed.org. You can also join us on our website by going to kqed.org/forum. And click on this segment, post your question or comment there, talking with Murray Sperber, Scott Osler, Ray Ratto, and Jerry Lewis. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The San Francisco 49ers have banned tailgating, actually during games, after two men were shot over the weekend at a Raiders 49ers exhibition game, and the victims being treated at the same hospital where Brian Stowe is recovering after being beaten to near death wearing a Giants jersey in Dodger Stadium. And These recent incidents, well, are they part of a larger pattern of violence is what we're asking here, and are teams doing enough to protect their fans? And we want to hear from you. Does violence at sporting events make you more likely to watch from home? You can post your question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and click on this segment, or email us, forum@kqed.org. With us this hour, Murray Sperber, visiting professor in cultural studies at Sports Education Program, Graduate School of Education, UC Berkeley, and author of Beer and Circus, How Big-Time College Sports is Crippling Undergraduate Education. Scott Osler, sports columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Ray Ratto, columnist for CSNBayArea.com. With us by phone from Kent, Ohio, is Jerry M. Lewis, professor of sociology at Kent State University and author of Sports Fan Violence in North America. Murray Sperber had some more comments, and actually we had to go to a break there. We'll hear from our listeners in just a moment. You were saying, Professor?
Well, I was saying when I go to games, I take the Muni bus from downtown, and it passes Union Square, and fans of other teams are often staying in hotels there. So like a whole Seahawk delegation with the jackets. And because they're real 49er fans on the bus, I mean, there's people I recognize for years, they're very polite to the opposing. There's none of this in your face or taunting them or anything like that. And four important games often. And I've always been struck by how polite real San Francisco 49er fans are, but they're a kind of diminishing breed unless the team comes back.
And Professor Lewis, could I get you just to comment for a moment on this, something we were talking about off air, which is the idea that a lot of these fans are kind of there and making a lot of noise or drinking, using profanity, spilling their alcoholic beverages onto people, and it gets people riled up who are real fans. I mean, this is part of the problem, isn't it?
I worry about that. That was the explanation often on soccer hooliganism in England from the 70s to 80s, even now, is that they're not real fans. I'd like to know what a real fan is. They've made the fans who are there have made commitments to cost, although the tickets are lower, as you guys have suggested. We need, for instance, we need a knowledge test. Do we know the history of the team? Do we know the starting lineup? Do we know what a California offense is or a West Coast offense? So I think we need to be very careful when we say they're not real fans without coming up with a serious definition of what a real fan is. The other thing I'd like to ask my colleagues on the panel is, has there been any connection between the two shootings shown at all in terms of the shooters or in terms of the people who got shot? Because we need to, since this panel's early, we need a lot more information.
I don't think there's anything really yet. Scott, Matt Ray, no.
I haven't seen anything. Well, they haven't found either the perpetrator, so I don't know how you could make a causation argument based on that minimal information.
Okay,
so Jerry's
and the guy who got hurt and got beat up in the restroom too. It was a third victim, as I understand.
Well, it'll be more clear perhaps if these people are brought to justice as well they should be. I'm just wondering though, how much of this would you? And maybe we're just guessing here. How much of this do you think is being exacerbated by the times we live in? More people out of work, more difficult economic hard times, that sort of thing. I mean, so that people who come out to the park are not necessarily as calm as they might have been at another time. In fact, I'm looking at Frank Gore's comment here, the star running back, who says, I think some of the fans take it too serious. It's a football game. I don't think they should be fighting and shooting and all that. Well, we're talking about maybe people who are just aggressive and out of work or unhappy with their lives in many instances and drinking too much.
Well, that's the alienation hypothesis. Professor Sperber could speak to that better than I can, but that many people oppose that the fighting fans are estranged from family, work, religion, education, and that's why we need to know more about the perpetrators before we can make a judgment on that.
You have something you might want to add to that, Murray Sperber?
I think Professor Lewis is right. I think until you really know who this demographic is. Now, it seems to me pretty clear from what I've observed at games. It's certainly young males between 18 and 35, but as far as class goes, for one thing, it's expensive to go to a 49er game, even an exhibition game. And if you're buying beer at $11 a pop, you may be out of work, but you've got to have money from somewhere. And I don't see these people. They are somewhat analogous to the rioters in England, and the alienation theory is being applied to them. But I think you'd have to know a lot more about these people.
I remember interviewing early on in my broadcasting career, Wayne Walker. There's a name for people who are nostalgic, used to play for the Lions and was a sportscaster here. And he said, people shouldn't take these games so seriously, which is essentially what Frank Gore is saying. And yet this was an exhibition game, so people wouldn't necessarily take it seriously to begin with. I mean, it doesn't count, really. Here's something I knew nothing about. This is from JT, who says, what about the two sports DJs on 95.7 that advocate violence toward anyone who goes to an Oakland sports event and dares to support another team? Why aren't those two guys suspended from the airwaves and made to apologize so their listeners can have the message that sportsmanship applies as much to fans as it does to players and teams on the field? They've been spotting their hate messages even after the Brian Stowe attack. I don't know anything about this. Maybe somebody can enlighten me, but it seems to me that, you know, when you're a kid, you're supposed to learn good sportsmanship. It's part of basic civics. You know, this team beat us. Okay, go and shake hands and all that sort of thing. I mean, that's what I learned as a young athlete.
I think tribalism is a different thing than sportsmanship when you're 8 or 10, because most of the times if you're playing, if you're 10 years old, you're playing other 10-year-olds at something. You know, you're in either a fairly controlled environment or they're kids you know. I think it's when leagues and entities like this are trying to make these events huge apocalyptic things, there's a certain segment of the fan base that will believe that. And, you know, Frank Gore's not being disingenuous when he says it's just a football game, even though it's a business to him. But, you know, there are a lot of things that play into being a fan. It's my colors against your colors, or, you know, I just bet the kid's orthodonture bill on this and I just lost. I mean, they view sports far differently than the athletes do. Even the good-natured fans that Murray knows, if the 49ers lose, they're probably in a fairly foul mood going home. They may not take it out on anybody, but they're emotionally invested in this, maybe more than is healthy. But that's something that's been ginned up by the media, by the leagues who run these. You know, these games mean something. They're you know, this is a part. This is a way to evaluate whether you live in a big league town or not. So, I mean, that pot gets stirred all the time from a lot of different directions, and you can't always assume that everybody is going to be able to pull back and go, well, yeah, but it's just an event. Well, it's not an event when you're charging what you're charging for it, when you keep telling people how important it is, and you can't guarantee that everybody's going to view this the same way.
Let me go to our callers, and we'll begin, Scott, with you. Good morning. You're on the air on Forum.
Thanks for taking my call. I think the answer to the question, is enough being done? It's no, no, and no. But I think the question is actually a little bit deeper than that, because the league's not doing enough, the teams aren't doing enough. And what do we glorify? We glorify the big hits like Raheem Moore. We glorify the guys who do the over-the-top touchdown dance. We glorify, you know, the in-your-face behavior and people who act with civility, people who act with a good sportsman attitude, get portrayed as chumps, you know, as sort of the bumpkin, sort of the you're behind the times. And I think until we're willing to address the bigger picture of civility in our country and the people who are with you as our heroes start demonstrating and displaying that behavior in a real and genuine way, this question, you can't enforce civility through force.
Scott, did something happen to you at a game? You had an episode that you wanted to at least bring attention to? Pardon?
I went to a Niner game several years ago, and because we got tickets through the office, not something we paid for, but we were shocked by the ticket price. We were shocked by the staff behavior at the stadium, like we showed up at the gate with a backpack with our blanket and our cushion, not knowing that the rules say you can't bring a backpack, but you can bring a big old shoulder bag. The people who worked the beer stands, the people who worked the hallways, the staff were rude, the police were aggressive, the fans were reacting to that behavior. I just found the entire scene at the stadium to be a breeding ground for violence and fights. And
you don't go to games anymore?
Nope.
I say you don't go, you stay away now? You don't go to games?
Right. I said, no, I don't go to games. And no. I will not go to a game. It's not worth my life and limb or getting beer spilled on me, frankly. I mean, and not spilled on me accidentally through some cheer, but because somebody thinks that's the way to, you know, enforce their version of bravado by
standing me down and dumping beer on me because I had a different opinion about a play.
Oh, Scott, thank you for the call. In fact, here's another listener, Heather, who writes, when sporting events are left to the ill-behaved thugs, only thugs will go to sporting events. When I lived in Chicago, I avoided Wrigley Field like the plague because of the drunken frat boys. Comiskey was a much better fan experience, and when my daughter was born, we loved taking her to the games. We wouldn't have taken her to Wrigley. It's not that kind of a park. Like my European friends, I'd never bring the family to a football game. Ticket prices, aggressive tailgating, and just generally the attitudes of fans make pro football a TV-only experience. And since moving to California, our family sporting experience of choice is hockey. We love the atmosphere, the fans, the game, our Sharks value young fans, and it's evident at every game we've attended. We can hit the HP Pavilion and expect to have some good, clean family fun. I don't know, Scott, you think we get different experiences, not only at different sports, but different stadiums?
Oh, definitely. In fact, the last caller, Scott, he mentioned that he made a connection between some of the crazy touchdown celebrations, and maybe that's part of the breakdown of civility. I would challenge that because I don't think people see Randy Moss doing a dance in the end zone, and they decide they can act out. If you're going to make that connection, you got to go to the NBA, and there's a lot of theatrics in the NBA, guys celebrating and stuff like that, but you don't see fights in the NBA stands. So I don't think that's a root cause.
You know, you don't see many fights at boxing matches either, do you? I mean, you would think with all that...
Often not even in the ring.
Well, let's leave the ring out of this. But I mean, out in the fan base. Let me go to more calls, and we'll go to Chester, Maryland, and welcome Sherry. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. It's not a question. It's just a comment. Very interesting. My friend just went to London. He's a big Chelsea football fan. And he bought tickets online over here in America and got over there. And when he got over there, he showed up at the stadium with his Chelsea gear and everything on. And he found out that he bought visitor tickets. And so they made him take all of his Chelsea football paraphernalia, if you will, off and sit in the visitor side. He couldn't chant. He was behind a fence. And it was just a really... He said it's a very strange experience, but I was just saying, you know, thinking, is that what it's going to come to years down the road here? And I'll take my comment off air. Thanks.
Okay, well, thank you for the call. Maurice Berber, want to comment?
Well, as we were talking before, the Europeans take it much more take the violence much more seriously because there's been some terrible incidents with large numbers of people dying in Belgium, if you remember, because of a football riot. And I've gone to games in London, too, and I was really amused. The idea of him sitting among the visitors with full Chelsea regalia.
Yeah. I saw where the call was going
to. Not a good idea, and them making him take it off was a good idea. And
English Premier Football League,
right,
for those who
right.
don't know.
Yeah. And as far as, you know, we were talking before about how much it costs to police it, and there's certainly a huge police presence at European matches, but they don't consider the cost. Law and order is far more important to them, and they bring in their special brigades of French riot police for games, and they take it much more seriously, probably because of the incidents in the past. But
and further, English police travel to Europe when they're
Jerry Lewis.
For instance, if Aston Villa goes to Holland, the British police will travel with them.
Right.
So you're correct.
Mm.
Professor Sherber's right. Correct. The other thing is, though, Chelsea has a reputation of being some of the worst fans in the Premier League. So, along with Arsenal and a couple other London
right,
clubs.
But the caller, I think her friend was going to sit among the – had bought tickets in the visiting section and was going to sit
there. I know, and the fans were going to take on the Chelsea fans. That's why she had to change or somebody had to change uniform.
We're on the subject of police, although this is transatlantic we're talking about with Chelsea, Judy has something to add here. Hi, Judy. You're on.
Hi. One of your guests remarked earlier that – the public shouldn't be paying for the additional police, and I want to agree with that very wholeheartedly, that if the stadiums, the teams are charging however much for the beers, somebody said, one of your guests said $11 for beers, however much it is, they can afford to pay for the police.
All right. I thank you for that, and let me go on to New York. Chris, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you? This problem isn't mutually exclusive to Northern California, that's for sure. I think it's been going on probably since the Romans. Anyway, I had an experience at Foxborough a few years ago. I went up for a Jets-Patriots game. A Patriot fan friend of mine gave me some beautiful seats right up in the front row almost, right in the corner of the end zone, and these guys behind us wanted to fight. It had nothing to do with football. It had nothing to do with the event. It had nothing to do with sports. It had to do with the fact that they'd been drinking all day. We were wearing a different color, and they didn't believe that we should be in the seats that we were in. And fortunately, nothing ever happened. We pretty much called security, and it was taken care of. But it has nothing to do with sport. It's goons being goons. And one quick interesting story. At a concert, the Foo Fighter concert, David Grohl did something very, very interesting, who's the lead singer of the band. He looked, he saw a fight happening somewhere within his vision. He stopped the music, directed the lights right onto the guy, cursed him out, and had him thrown out of the stadium immediately because he was witnessing a fight. And I thought that was an interesting way to handle it.
At a rock concert, you could do that, maybe. I don't know about
it. It'd be kind of cool at a football game.
Yeah. Thank you for the call. Actually, speaking about where you're seated, here's Sarah in San Rafael who says, we go every other year to San Jose to watch the Sharks play our favorite Canadian team. The fans boo the Canadian national anthem, even though most of the players are from Canada, and I've had beer spilled on me. Feels like a fight is always just about to break out. Last time, a colleague of ours gave us a pair of season's tickets in the sixth row, and I have to say, it's much more civilized than the expensive seats. If people are bringing kids to sporting events, they may think about spending the extra money for good seats. And you know,
I really
contrast to the other email about the San Jose Sharks, which seemed.
Yeah, no, I go. I'm a Canadian originally, and still actually, and always will be. And I go to quite a few Sharks games every year, and I'm struck by it's a beautiful arena. The fans are very polite. I remember a game against Toronto this past winter, and there, I'd say half the fans there had Toronto Maple Leaf shirts on or regalia, and the Sharks fans were very polite. I've never seen a fight.
Does it depend where you sit, though? Is that color?
I'm sitting. Been pretty. I'm sitting in the cheap seats up high, you know.
Well, here's another listener, Alex, who says, absolutely, it makes me want to watch from home. I love the Giants, but the first Giants-Dodger game I went to in September 2010 with my best friend is absolutely my last. Beers being thrown, people being arrested around us, guys yelling and swearing very loudly. It's scary and takes the fun out of being in that gorgeous ballpark. I'll stick to interleague play where tempers are less heated and the division title is never on the line. And Drew writes, having worked in forensics as a psychotherapist, I've interviewed several people who have been killed while under the influence of alcohol. While people act in a violent manner under the influence, it's not uncommon. Why not treat the situation at the stadium similar to that of a drunk driver? If the police are suspicious of excessive alcohol, then have them blow numbers on a breathalyzer. If they have high numbers, arrest them for being intoxicated at the stadium. Another listener says, why not have players set a good example and shake hands immediately after the game? Back to what we learned in grade school. From Lafayette, Tom, you're on. Good morning.
Hey, subject matter, guys. Two comments. One, we can't ever forget that this is entertainment. The NFL knows its demographic. It's 18 to 35-year-old men. So that is point one. I think there's an accountability that the franchise has to take in setting a very professional atmosphere for a high-ticket entertainment item. First of all, the Raiders are probably the laggard in the NFL for providing a Class A stadium, Class A event staff, Class A really anything product. So I think the fan base follows that. If you go to Indiana and go to Lucas Oil Stadium and watch the Colts, these kind of shenanigans don't exist. I mean, I'm not going to say they never exist, but the intimidation and virility that exists at an Oakland Raiders football game, it's not like that elsewhere. So I think it's the accountability of the franchise to set a very professional setting that reflects, you know, the entertainment value of what people are paying for. The 49ers are a little bit better, but I'll tell you what, they're behind the curve too. So that's the comment. It's entertainment, but the franchise has to be accountable to setting a professional venue for the entertainment.
All right. I thank you for that comment. And anybody want to comment on the comment?
No, I will say one thing that that he mentioned something about how the Raider fans are maybe worse, a little harder edged or whatever, and there may be something to that. I think there is a pride factor over there that they pride themselves on being a little bit tougher and everything. I don't know if that translates into arrest and stuff. I heard an interview this morning on another radio station with the chief of security of the NFL, and he mentioned that the 49ers tend to be in the higher end of the ratings in terms of crowd safety and everything. I'd like to see these ratings. I'd like to see which crowds are what is the worst crowd? What is the best crowd in the NFL? And if these ratings were made public, maybe it would shame some of the lower teams into beefing up. You know, if you're at the bottom of the scale in terms of security and safety in your stadium, maybe you better do something.
More than ratings, even just a proportion of police officers to fans, too.
Right.
That would be really useful. Let me get to some more of your calls. Daisy, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on. Good morning.
Hi, thanks. I just have a comment about the Raiders. I am a Raider fan, and the question you posed actually doesn't apply to Raider fans because the home games are blacked out for us. So we can't choose to stay at home and watch a home game. We have to actually show up at the stadium because we just don't have that option.
And they're blacked out because they don't sell out, pretty much. Isn't that the reason? Yeah.
Yeah.
See, if more of you fans would go out to the games, then you could watch them on TV.
There you go. Yeah. Inverse thing. Thank you for the call, and we go to San Jose. Miguel, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Okay. Thank you. Join us.
Good. Great. I just had two quick comments. The first one that I wanted to say is that I'm a very, very, very diehard, hardcore Dallas Cowboys fan, and I know that when my team loses on TV, it ruins my day. If anyone talks to me or says the wrong thing, I get really angry and really upset. However, I never get violent, and that's, you know, my own personal thing. And I think that we really have to put the human individual aspect back into the conversation, because we can say, oh, Raider fans this, Raider fans that, or this stadium is bad and that stadium is bad, and it really comes down to individual choices. And then the second comment I wanted to make was that I used to live in Los Angeles for a couple of years, and I've been to dozens and dozens and dozens of LA games, Dodger games, that is. And I also lived in San Francisco, and I've been to dozens of Giants games. And I will say that in LA, I saw maybe one fight out of all the games I've been to. And when I go to Giants games, I probably see two or three every game. And I think the difference is that when I was over in L.A., there was a big thing in that, during a tailgate, there was a fight once, and then they stopped allowing tailgating, and it was kind of like a punishment to the fans, to where if you fight, we're going to take more of your rights away. And maybe that's something that, you know, the stadium should be accountable for whenever, you know, serious things like that happen.
All right. Thank you for your call. And Jerry Lewis, let me go back to you for a minute here. Do you think we're I keep thinking about guns in the parking lot and all that with this last episode that we saw over the weekend. Are we on a different path here, a different trajectory, or is this?
Well, in terms of the data I have of the 200 riots I've looked at, absolutely. The presence of guns and also the preseason are really two new variables, and we have to be concerned about that. One thing I'd like to comment on is that the National Football League and the NBA and others are very reluctant to release data, and I hope my journalist colleagues on the panel can write something about getting some data, because they must have after game reports. They must have, and we just learned about a ranking system. The league offices are very reluctant to share that with scholars, and I think we need to put some pressure on that so we can really find out what's going on.
And from Rochester, New Hampshire, Rob joins us. Hi, Rob. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Good conversation. So just hearing about colored shirts, people getting mad at each other for wearing Raiders, 49ers. I have a problem with grown men trying to dress like they're the football players and wearing, 20-year-old men names on their back. I think it's just mental. And maybe if you are a grown man dressing like a kid, maybe you do deserve a smack in the mouth. I was a Steve Grogan fan when I was a kid. I had his shirt, but, you know, I'm 40 years old now, so I don't wear a Tom Brady shirt.
I just assumed those people were all relatives of Tom Brady's.
By speaking,
speaking about
Tom Brady, here's a listener named Rob who says, I have New England Patriots season tickets, and they make me responsible for whoever sits in my seats. If those people misbehave, I lose my tickets, so I only sell them to people I trust. This works very well.
Well, the 49ers say they do that, and they say that there were approximately 30 people last year who lost their seats for, I guess, selling them to people who then used them to But that seems like a kind of low number, and it seems like it'd be pretty hard to enforce.
And let me get a caller from Sacramento. Darcy, join us. Hi, you're on forum.
Hi, yeah, I want to comment about, I think you guys have been talking about the beer and the alcohol and the culture of the event. And the thing is, I'm a New Orleans Saints fan, and they like the difference between, you know, the Niners games, they serve crappy beer. In New Orleans, they serve hard liquor, and it doesn't really affect the outcome because everybody down there is so mellow and it's so hot. And who's going to really want to get in a fight when they're just – it brings a smile to my face when I start yelling, who dat? So I just – you know, I think there's a lot to do with the culture, and the alcohol might not have a lot to do with it.
All right. Thank you for that. By the way, I talked about the fine behavior after the World Series, but as this caller points out, and I think he's right, he says, I was on the street celebrating after the Giants won. It was exciting for about 2-3 hours. Unfortunately, after that, it did explode into chaos. There were mattresses burning, graffitiing vehicles, and a group was, in fact, trying to topple over a van parked on a car. The reason this didn't escalate further was because there was a police presence. A little after 10 p.m., they were out in the riot gear clearing the streets, and it was very effective. They simply wasn't enough police. I don't think enough is being done to make sure that charged atmosphere spills over into violence. I guess we've been saying that along here, and I hope, Jed York, you're listening, as well as others from ownership capability to change things.
Over the years, I've seen
Al Davis, yeah.
Many fights in the upper deck at Candlestick, and the police arrive, but way after the fight, usually, and there has not traditionally been a very large police presence in the parts of the park where they need it. I think the police would rather stand in the lower part so they can see the game better, but that's not what they're being paid to do there.
Well, it's been an illuminating conversation. Let me thank all of you. Again, Murray Sperber, visiting professor in cultural studies at UC Berkeley, and Jerry Lewis, who's with us by phone this morning from Kent, professor of sociology at Kent State. Ray Ratto, columnist for CSNBayArea.com, and Scott Osler, sports columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. Jerry Lewis's book is Sports Fan Violence in North America. Murray Sperber's is Beer and Circus, How Big-Time College Sports is Crippling Undergraduate Education. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and to our producers, Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.